Welcome to Reflection Time, the program that looks at world events and everyday issues through the eyes of the scriptures, and as well shares with you some inspirational music. Welcome to Reflection Time. This week we're going to be changing gears a little bit from what we've been broadcasting over the past few weeks. We have been sharing a number of programs on Sinking the Beagle, which was a debate over the creation and evolution issue. But we're going to get back to our regular format now, in which we carry Lifeline Productions, some health information, as well as an amazing fact. And this week and next, we're going to carry a two-part series in which we look at probably, well, without a doubt, really, the most significant event that took place in the summer of 2009. Before we get to that, now you're probably wondering, what was the most significant event that we faced over the summer? Well, in a minute, we'll address that. But first, we'll share with you a song by Michael Card and John Talbot, entitled One Faith. One, two, three.
He is the Good Shepherd. He's laid down his life for his sheep. So out of many nations, he's gathered one fold in one faith. And he has built his church on the rock foundation of faith, on apostles and prophets who shepherd the people in his place. There is one faith, one hope, and one baptism, one God and Father of all. There is one church, one body, one life in the Spirit now given so freely to all. He gave to Simon Peter and to all of the 12 the keys of the kingdom so darkness would never prevail. But some of the shepherds have pastured themselves on their sheep. So he has come out against them and scattered his people of faith. But there still is one faith, one hope, and one baptism, one God and Father of all. There is one church, one body, one life in the Spirit now given so freely to all. Thank you.
Flu season is upon us. Many people are looking for different remedies as to how to cure the flu, or better yet, how to avoid the flu. With diseases in the news such as H1N1, or as some refer to it as a swine flu, or other strains of the flu, or ailments that we might face, Dr. Becky Wong of Lifeline Productions will share some timely advice as to how we can use garlic to improve our health.
When it comes to garlic, fresh is best. This is Dr. Becky Wong for Lifelines. According to new research published in the Journal of Agricultural and Food Chemistry, fresh garlic may be better for you. Researchers compared fresh garlic with garlic preserved in water, alcohol, and vegetable oil to measure for allicin, the main active ingredient in garlic, which has antibacterial properties. Some studies have even shown that allicin also helps fight against blood clots and certain cancers. Because allicin is fragile and disappears quickly, fresh, crushed garlic has higher levels of allicin than preserved versions. As the level of allicin drops, garlic's antibacterial properties also decline. So to get the full benefits of garlic, go fresh.
Lifelines, a public service of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, provides practical answers to common health questions. For more free health tips, call 877-LIFE-TIPS or visit vibrantlife.org.
The Vatican is the world's smallest country. That's right, country. In 1929, under the terms of the Lateran Treaty, Vatican City was established as an independent state of 109 acres within Rome. Less than 1,000 people live in this small country governed by the Pope, who has absolute executive and judicial powers. Yet despite the tiny territory, 177 sovereign countries have formal relations with the Vatican. That's why it should not surprise us that Bible prophecy foretells that the Pope will play a major role in the world's final affairs. In our studio today, we have our co-host, Mary Osarik, as usual. Welcome again, Mary.
Thank you, Paul.
Well, Mary, we started off the show today by saying that we're going to discuss the most significant event of the summer of 2009. Mm-hmm. If you were to look back over the summer, what would you think was the most significant event of 2009? There were many things that took place in the news. What comes to mind for you?
Well, I just happened to be on my vacation in Europe this summer, and one thing that was on every channel seemed to be was the funeral of Michael Jackson on July 7th.
Yeah, and that's something that dragged on in the news for
a
lengthy period of time, not just the funeral, but...
No, it was leading up before that, of course, and it was interesting... He was referred to the King of Rock, and I thought that was interesting. There's another king in the Bible, in the Book of Daniel, called King of North, mm-hmm. who takes on the prerogative of God himself, because in the Bible, God's kingdom is referred to the Kingdom of North, but he takes on this sitting as God on this earth and deciding on for God. And I thought it was interesting that here we have King of Pop being buried and a dead man in a casket where billions of people are taking the time to watch this. But at the same time, Paul, we know that there were some other significant event that most people might have missed on the radar that took place in Rome. And what would that be, Paul?
And it's something that was sort of just a, sort of a passing interest on the news, and that was the release of the encyclical by the Pope.
Pope Benedict, yes.
Yeah. Something that was very significant, and you wonder about the timing. You know, if when we see the funeral of Michael Jackson taking place, we see the eyes of the world focused on one area.
Yes.
But you have to ask yourself, what's taking place over here, or what's taking place over there? Because you have to keep your eyes open and watch what's taking place around you, around the world. So yes, the Pope Benedict released his encyclical the day of the funeral of Michael Jackson.
And the encyclical is, we should probably tell our listeners that that's a very authoritative, the most authoritative letter that a Pope can write on various issues.
And it wasn't just the release of the encyclical. Within the following days of the release of the encyclical, well, we should talk about the encyclical first, actually. The encyclical itself was entitled, Mario, as what?
Well, it's called Charity in Truth, and it's a 144-page letter in which Pope Benedict XVI comments on the world's current economic crisis and, from his perspective, what he sees as a solution.
Yeah, well, a number of solutions.
A number of solutions, yes, yeah. We should say that. Yeah. It's a small, well, you know, 144 pages might not sound a lot, but it's it brings up various aspects, how he sees a solution to this world economic problems, and not just in the finance, but even other areas of the crisis that we see today, whether it be environment, poverty, and so on.
It's almost as if they're looking for an opportune time to bring forth their agenda, you know, hence through this encyclical. But before we actually look at the encyclical, which actually included about 9 or 10 significant factors worthy of discussion, after the release of the encyclical on July the 7th, it wasn't simply just a release. What followed the day after the release of the encyclical?
Well, most people might be aware of it. There was a G20 meeting that took place in this town in Italy that had been ravaged a few months before by an earthquake.
Yeah, L'Aquila, Italy.
And this was a big meeting by the G20 meetings that were taking place the day after.
So it's no insignificant matter. Coincidence, the release of the encyclical took place before the G20 meeting.
No, and that's interesting to see what happened after the G20 meeting as well, which would be July 9th. And I think that struck my eyes too, because that was when, as far as I know, both President Obama and Harper both went and had official meeting with the Pope.
With their families.
With his families too, and we're going to look at that in another episode of this. But it was interesting, what struck me was that the Pope gave this encyclical in white leather format to President Obama as a gift. Right after the G20. So I thought it was interesting that they announced it before and they enforced it afterwards by officially giving it to President Obama.
So the most significant event we saw took place during the summer was on the release of the encyclical on July 7th, the G8 meeting, which took place the following day on the 8th. President Obama and his family met with the Pope on July the 9th, and the following day, on the 10th, was Stephen Harper and his family.
Yes.
And there was something else of interest, too, I noticed, when you looked at the mainstream news networks, when they carried pictures of the visit of the President Obama and after that Prime Minister Harper with the Pope and their wives there. There's a number of comments or questions as to why are their wives dressed like that? Why are they in black? Why is their face veiled? Because no matter which picture you see of the Pope, where he has the heads of state and their wives visiting, the females are always dressed the same. They're dressed in black and their faces are veiled. Why is that, Mary? It's not just
coincidence.
Coincidence, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's interesting. I think both the Bible and the Vatican itself might give us clues. The Vatican has said that as these Protestant countries come with their official wives for visit, they will have to wear a black dress, and particularly a veil, a black veil to cover their face. They're not only covering, but they have to wear it. And I thought it's interesting when you refer to, and by the way, the Pope is always in white. So I thought it was interesting, white and black. But besides from that, Paul, usually when you see someone wearing black, what does that usually signify? Or a woman that wears...
Well, usually it's a sign of mourning. Or
a mourning, someone's death. And I thought, you know, what is this signifying is that at one time, the Protestant Reformation said, you know, the Pope is saying, you departed from us. Now you have to wear that veil of mourning because we are the truth. And you have to come back here. And it's interesting because if you look in the Bible, you'll find in many references of referring to a queen who sits and says, I am not a widow. I will not mourn. And that's referring, when you look at prophetically, to the Vatican itself. That it's a mother church. It refers in the book of Revelation, a mother church. And the daughters, you know, she cannot be a daughter because she's a mother. And so they're basically saying, the Reformation never took place. You have to come back home.
Yeah.
And if you come back home, you're going to show that this, by this expression of veiling yourself and wearing a black in a sort of a mourning state that you are in.
Right, yeah. Yeah. So, and like I say, every female individual that comes before the Pope, we've seen the Governor General of Canada.
Yeah. Protestant. You have seen cases where other, whether it would be a kings or leaders from a Catholic countries come and the females do not wear black.
Yeah. It's interesting because when the Queen goes before the Pope,
she has to wear black.
Yeah. The Governor General of Canada did the same thing. Yeah.
Prince Charles went with both Diana when she was alive, she wore black, and now with the current wife, Camilla Parker. And that's interesting too, Paul. That happened a few months before the G20 meeting this summer, that Prince Charles and his wife also had a meeting with Pope Benedict the 16th.
Yeah.
So not just political leaders are going to Vatican, but also the King of England, or King to be.
Future.
See.
And there's something else too that the Bible talks about, and it talks about the beast, because we've talked about this in the program a number of times in the past. You know, the scripture refers to the beast, and you know how that ties into the papacy. But it says the beast receives a deadly wound, but that the wound would be healed.
Yes.
We know historically that in 1798, the papacy received what was referred to in the scripture as a deadly wound.
Yes.
It's when Napoleon's General Berthier took the Pope captive. Mm-hmm. At that point in time, the papacy still was a religious leader, but was no longer a political leader.
That's true.
But it's interesting, in what year was that wound healed?
1929.
And what happened then?
And that's when the Mussolini, together with the Vatican, signed a treaty. And it's interesting, the San Francisco Chronicle was carrying an article in that year, 1929, and they referred the world to the word, the healing of the wound.
Yeah.
And it was exactly like the Bible uses the same terminology.
We see a prominent secular paper using biblical terminology to point to the fulfillment of prophecy as to what was taking place in the world.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? You know,
God has to have his hand in something like that.
Truly so.
Yeah.
He's trying to wake us up to show us where we are in a stream of prophetic time and what's coming down on the events in the world.
So since 1929, we see the papacy moving forward once again as a political power.
Mm-hmm.
And in that amazing fact that we shared, we stated that there's 177 sovereign countries that have now formal relations with the Vatican.
Mm. And I was just thinking, you need an ambassador to be sent for each country so they have a communication to go. And it's interesting how many of these ambassadors have grown over the years. Each country has been more favorable of sending an ambassador and having a tie with the Vatican. And I found it interesting that America has never sent an ambassador until 1984. Mm-hmm. When President Reagan was the first. Before that, the Congress never allowed it because they understood they had to keep the Roman church out of America, so to speak. And it was always a problem sending a ambassador. It was always denied before. So 1984 was the first time that America officially sent ambassador to Vatican.
Yeah, because the America was really considered as a Protestant country. Mm. You know, some will look at it now and say, well, it's Protestant, but it's really sort of maybe an apostate Protestantism right now, as opposed to, you know, its true Protestant roots that it was. And we share this as a sort of a lead up, a background as to now this, you know, encyclical that the papacy has come out with, which is really, you know, quite significant, some shocking statements in it. And now many people would say, well, so what? You know, the papacy is no world power. They're not, you know, they don't bear sway over the other countries to any significant degree. They're not like a superpower like the States, where they've got, you know, arms on their side and they've got, you know, an army and, you know, people to back them up. But what would you say to that?
I would say that history repeats itself, Paul. And I think we must never forget the history that took place in the past. How a system, the Roman Catholic Church system, we understand they're good, loving people. There are Catholics, but we're looking at system when we're looking at these, the biblical point of view of bringing out the various countries that are involved at the end of time. Mm-hmm. And history shows us that during the Dark Ages, millions of people, you know, for their faith, were burned on a stake. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this was a persecuting church who proclaimed being Christ-like, but they were persecuting those who were saying that they were followers of Christ. And I think it's interesting that we're seeing a healing of the wound is when this power comes back and receives a total power. The question is, will we go back to that time where a religious persecution can be a very prominent if you do not follow what the majority are want to force?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there's many sources that would indicate prior to the fall of the Berlin Wall that there was three world superpowers, the Soviet Union, the United States, and the papacy.
I think
now we're down to two.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting you brought up that the falling down of the Berlin Wall, you know, I thought of two other walls really that need to come down. Well, Berlin Wall has come down in terms of that, but the other ones is in America itself, and the Bible fairly clears that there's going to come a time where church and state are going to unite. And the Constitution of America would have to be changed to include that. Mm-hmm. And we know the third one, another wall of separation that's been put in there to safeguard this one world economic or one world power to be, is the nationalism of the different countries. Mm-hmm. That has to come down and be basically, yes, you can have your country, but you're going to be in the big global world and you're going to follow what's called natural laws or laws that governs everyone.
Yeah.
And we hear more and more of that, Paul.
Yeah, even in the G20 in Pittsburgh, you can hear the underlying effects of that, you know?
Yes, because we're moving towards, and Obama made some interesting statements on that he says, we have sought in word and deed a new era of engagement with the world. And so it's interesting. Now is the time for all of us to take our share or responsibility. A lot of good things he might be bringing out, but he's bringing out the deeds and work that needs to be, the United Nations need to be reformed as well, as we're going to see that comes out of this letter on the Pope wrote. So we see two powers coming on the stage, and the Bible depicts them in Revelation 13 as the papacy, but the other one is America. And when you look in Book of Revelation 13, you'll find that both of them becomes very prominent players and both very powerful in its sphere of power and influence in the world.
And we talk about the separation of church and state. You know, Revelation chapter 13, you know, talks about this beast coming up out of the land, you know, with the two horns. And when you study Bible prophecy, it points to the United States, and it points to the fact that there's two significant factors that highlighted the definition, really, of the United States, and that was a separation of church and state. And that's ingrained within their constitution, the separation of church and state. The Bible tells us that separation in church of church and state will go, that wall between them will fall. And it's very interesting now that we see that, you know, the President of the United States himself is a constitutional lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, who better to understand and know the Constitution, and perhaps even, you know, to modify or amend it in perhaps even a covert way to bring about this separation, removing that separation of church and state.
Now, so that we were referring to the Revelation 13:11. It says, "And I beheld another beast coming out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb. He spake as a dragon." You know, it's interesting. I was reading at things. You know how they give names for different things. Mm-hmm. You know, the airplanes and what the president uses. Do you know what the name of the Obama's big van is, or whatever they use? It's like a tank, really.
Yeah.
It's called the Beast.
The Beast.
Yeah. I thought it was fascinating. You know, another word that pops out here.
Yeah, Bible terminology.
Bible terminology again, you know. So I thought fascinating. But again, in Revelation 13, it picks the other power that comes. It says, as you know, coming out of sea, meaning multitude, and a very populated area at the time, you know, coming out. And it says, describing that what we refer to here, that one of his heads was wounded to death, in this verse 3. And so I saw one of his heads as he was wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world wandered after the beast. It says all the world wander after the beast.
Yeah, not just some of it, not just part of it, not just certain countries.
No, we're definitely seeing the wandering now of political leaders and kings to Rome for advice and for a solution to world problems.
Yeah, and all it takes is one significant event in the world, you know, to change things dramatically. We saw that with September 9/11.
Yes.
One
was a catalyst, really, to bring together people from not just different nations, but also religions are becoming prominent, coming together in discussing various issues in the world.
Yeah. And now with this fear of safety and security in the world, it's amazing what people will give up to maintain that, you know, peace, safety, and security around them.
So, Paul, maybe we should have a look at some of the points that were brought out in the letter, really. We'll discuss another episode, a little bit more, some of the world politics.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to leave that for the next program. Our
time's
pretty well up right now.
Okay.
But these 9 points that we've been, you know, we've been discussing overall with the significance of, you know, the prophecy and what happened, you know, this encyclical. But these points within this encyclical are highlighted with regards to what we've been discussing, the separation of church and state, globalism, so forth. And we'll look at that in depth in our next program.
Okay, that would be good, Paul.
Okay. We hope you've enjoyed the presentation. If you have any comments or questions, you can reach us at radioreflection@yahoo.ca. That's radioreflection@yahoo.ca. Remember this week to take time to reflect on God's Word, and whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, and whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, and if there be any praise, think on these things.